This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Welcome to Popcast Deluxe, your 4K guap TV Zay bop of weekly cultural review. I'm John Caramonica, critic of the New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm a reporter at the New York Times.
Before we jump into things, though, we have to remind everybody, here we are, two grown men on YouTube, youtube.com/popcast. Subscribe, like, we are here every week with a new episode, and also the audio episodes are uploaded to the channel. Like and subscribe.
Get in the comments. We'll respond. I'll respond.
Yeah, I was going to we. That's extremely strong we. There are a couple. But first of all, I appreciate people who take note of the outfits. I appreciate people who take note of the chairs. And I appreciate people take note of the lore. So just know we're watching. So it's youtube.com/popcast. Get involved. It's back to school.
This is back to school.
It's back to school. I got to be honest. I don't feel great to be back at school. I feel great to be here. This is like, if we're ever going to go to school, this is the school that we want to go to.
Recess.
Yeah, truly. Us walking through the hallways talking about Lil Wayne versus. So we're back at school. I want to say it was a slightly slow week in culture last week. There is some sort of like B-list television, B-list films that we were thinking about talking about, we're not going to talk about. Because the thing that I think we're most kind of provoked by was, I guess, loosely triggered by a conversation on Twitter prompted by the Andre 3000 album.
Which you discussed.
I did on Original Recipe Popcast. Shout out Zach. Shout out Sadie. Very good episode. Got good feedback on that episode.
It's an ambient episode.
It is. It actually is like low-key an ambient episode. In the interview that Andre did with Zach for GQ, Zach sort of is pushing him on why he's not rapping. And Andre's like, well, what am I going to rap about? Like, I'm 48, right?
Something like that.
He's like, what am I going to rap about? Like, my eyesight's not great. Like, colonoscopy.
I'm 48 years old, and not to say that age is a thing that dictates what you rap about, but in a way it does. And, like, things that happen in my life, like, what are you talking? Like, I got to go get a colonoscopy? Like, what are you... what do you rap about? You know what I mean? Like my eyesight is going bad. Like,
now, of course, Andre 3000, one of the great rappers of all time, technicians, one of the great creative idea generators, one of the people who fundamentally broke the idea of what hip hop was supposed to be in the early to mid 2000s. And almost all of us are living in the shadow of that, knowingly or otherwise. But it did sort of bring up the question, like, what is middle-aged rap sound like? And this is something we've touched on before. I was talking to Karen, actually, earlier, talking about Jay-Z, and she said, I will never forget running the photo of Jay-Z on the water ski, like on some piece I wrote X amount of years ago.
About whether Jay was too old to
rap. Yeah, something along those lines. And she's like, that's seared in my brain. Maybe we could find that photo and throw it up here. But Andre says, in essence, I have nothing to rap about. I shouldn't be rapping. That's not what rap is for. Now, I happen to think that's wrong.
I happen to think it's right.
I know. You mentioned. Maybe start with why you think it's right.
Music is for young people. Music is... Oh. Yes, see you, John. I'm aging out. Look, I'm aging out. I'm like, maybe... Bye, John. Sit down.
What? Not accurate.
I'm being a little bit glib, but I do think music, unlike most other art forms, this is a take that I've had at the bar for many years, yeah, and that I stand by. There is no musician in history, in popular music, who's later.
You want to get like, yeah?
I don't want to hear from Zach Wolf on this. I just don't. I don't know anything about classical music. Yeah. There's no musician whose later career music is better than their early career music. And I don't feel this way about writers, novelists. I don't feel this way about film directors. I don't feel this way about actors.
I wish I had prepped for this. I'm sure there's an answer. I'm sure there's a counter argument.
There is no answer. Like, there, I mean, I've heard Tom Petty, you know.
Never.
I've heard, shout out to Teddy. He gave me that one once. I've heard, you know, some people would say Dylan, but it's like, you can like stuff. Okay, and this is how I feel about old rappers. This is how I feel when I listen to 2 Chainz and Lil Wayne on Welcome to Collar Grove, the new edition of their mixtape, which we could talk about. Yeah. It's how I feel when I listen to Rick Ross and Meek Mill, also have a album out together. You know, how I feel.
Collaboration albums.
Yeah. I mean, old people, they need a crutch. literally.
That is actually not why that's happening, but okay, fine. Go on.
It's like the 7th season of a Showtime show. If you're invested, you still might get a nice moment, you know. You still want you want to follow the saga. Same thing as being a Drake fan.
You believe in the lore.
If you believe in the lore, fine. You might get a performance where you're like, oh, like Wayne sounds really athletic. He almost sounds like when I really loved his music. Like, but other than that, I think it comes down to a little bit of music being id, and like you want as little between, we've talked about this, as but little it, between what you're feeling and what comes out. And to me, that is like fundamentally a young person thing.
But let me ask this, like, is that not a reflection of your aging more than it is a reflection of the artist's aging? Because you are not at the place in your life where you have that unfettered access to id that you had when you first engaged.
So I want to get it from Playboi Carti and his children.
I mean, you want to be maybe near it, or you're open to the idea that what Carti is doing is a rough equivalent for like what Wayne did at a certain point. So like, how much of this is actually about artist age? Now, look, sidebar, most artists later work, don't bother me with it. No, I'm not disputing it.
Sure.
I just think it's not impossible to find grace and elegance and a different path towards beauty in a different phase of life that a young person could appreciate an older artist's music or an age appropriate. We sort of talked a little bit about like Griselda and stuff. And it's like I was thinking a lot about this when I had satellite radio for that 1 month, a few weeks ago. There's like a Shade 45 type rap fan.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like real like bars, like Scratch Magazine alum type energy with respect. Like these are all my friends. That kind of person, I think, like, is excited about, like, the 6th album from some artist who, like, raps exactly like they rapped on their 5th or 4th or 3rd or 2nd album because they're seeking to fill a hole that's, like, the exact same size, not looking for necessarily innovation.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking for things that retell a familiar narrative. But I think, for me, when I'm looking at younger artists, I'm looking for things that are novel or unexpected. But even when I'm listening to older artists, I think it's possible for an older artist to do a thing that is unexpected in the context of their character, in the context of their ongoing work. I mean, this is where the Jay-Z 444 conversation comes in.
Great album.
Really, really good album. I don't know if I love it as much as like in the moment where you're like, I can't believe he did this. And then like maybe 3 months later, you're like, okay, how often do I go back to this
album? Yet it's like the gold standard for album by old people.
But if Andre, here's the thing, Andre
up look, there with like Leonard Cohen and Johnny Cash.
Andre, here's the thing, wants to rap, great, doesn't want to rap, great, it's not our problem. Like, it's whatever choice, it's fine. I think if he found a path to a rap album or an album with rapping on it at this age on whatever subject matter he felt was right, I'm willing to bet that we would feel about that album very similar to how people felt about 444.
I agree.
And I also think the thing that I think Tyler said to me about Pharrell on the Louis Vuitton story, but also said to Andre, maybe it's in one of the Andre interviews. I don't know if it's in the GQ or maybe the Guardian.
Tyler, the creator.
Sorry. And he says, like, you basically innovating and trying things and going in unexpected directions let us know the full range of future opportunities available to us. And my only frustration with Andre saying like rap is not it, obviously it doesn't have to be, you know, like podcasting doesn't have to be it for us. You know, it's like people can grow and change and evolve. people can grow and change and evolve. But the notion that rap as a form could not accommodate some kind of evolutionary step, subject matter wise, flow wise, texture wise, that to me seems wrong. And I think there are people who still work, and if they're chipping away at like a very familiar thing that they do, but they still do it at an advanced age, that's fine. But there are people who probably are also trying new things. And I thought if anybody would be a person who's like, rap is limitless, rap can do anything, you would expect it to be Andre. But
yeah, but Flew, here we are. Look, I think form-wise, sure, any like you can talk about anything you want in rap, but typically what we're drawn to are stories of come up, stories of struggle, stories of
circumstantial.
No, I don't think so, but because it's been that way for 50 years
but
now.
That's you, but again, that's again, I think you're looking at young music made by young people for young listeners, but that doesn't mean that you can't arrive at middle-aged music made in a slightly more progressive mean for middle-aged listeners, or God forbid, the elderly.
Look, I think that that is fine. I'm just saying it doesn't really exist. And like, if we're still waiting for Andre to be the one to show us how it's possible, mm-hmm. okay. But instead, what I think we often get, I was thinking about this a lot in listening to the new Drake songs, the expanded edition of For All the Dogs,
Scary Hours edition.
Yeah. Which like, good rap songs. Like
great rap
cool,
songs.
Cool really rap good. Songs. Really good beats. Really good rapping.
Good rapping.
Real chip on the shoulder
it's,
energy.
It's great. Like, it's weird. It's, I mean, obviously they put it on there to like bump the album back up on the charts, but it's like, it is a self-contained, like those six songs feel like a self-contained idea of like a particular idea, a version of Drake.
But one of the things that Drake is doing, and it's funny because so much of the conversation that led him to be angry enough to record these songs were like, why isn't Drake more mature in his rapping? Course. But what I find that he's doing is the same thing that I found Jay doing, which is the same thing I found Wayne doing, which is the same thing I found Eminem doing, which is a lot of wordplay. As these guys get older and they have less and less story and less lore to tell, and even jokes, because Wayne, you know, Wayne is not necessarily a lore rapper. He's a punchline rapper. Mm-hmm. He's the best punchline rapper, but he's mostly a punchline rapper.
Yeah, sure.
Very, not very story few though. Story songs in the best of Wayne's.
No, music. Just like freaking syllables.
But what they get more and more into is like what words mean and how they sound. And
you like, mean
like
see, homophones?
Yes, homophones. Literally. And I asked Eminem about this like 10 years ago. I interviewed Eminem and I was like, do you ever like think like maybe you're too into the art of rapping and not into like making songs anymore? Like you're just saying words that have different meaning, like, you know? And he was basically like, yeah, like that's what when I interviewed him again this year, it was the same thing. He's like, he cares. He's so obsessed with it as a sport and as like technique.
Yeah.
And I find that these older rappers, when they're still good, they're just going deeper and deeper and deeper in technique and not necessarily interested in expanding storytelling wise or narrative.
That's fair, although I think you are talking about a particular class of rappers who were raised on technique. And I wonder if that's going to hold from like a certain type of rapper, like, you know, Future onward.
Well, Future's 40 years old.
Right. So we should know
that. Yeah.
But from Future onward, who are not sort of like classic technicians in like the Shade 4-5 sense.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, sure. Talking about those kind of rappers, that's different. I don't know. So, okay. We were talking about the Billboard rap charts, which are in a very, very unusual place. We talked about the pop charts a couple weeks ago.
And how they're broken. Rap charts also broken.
Also broken. And also, I looked on Rap Caviar just to kind of get a sense of what's happening right in this moment. I'm going to run some, can I just put some numbers to you?
Yeah, yeah.
Gucci Mane,
mm-hmm.
43 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Ross, 47 years old. Lil Wayne. 41 years
younger. Yeah, it's insane.
Lil Wayne been famous like longer, basically as long as we've been alive.
It's only 41.
2 Chainz, 48. And you mentioned Future, 40. So like all this kind of like anxiety, like, oh no, Andre said that you can't rap over 40. Here's five people who are literally like, who? Like what? That's not real.
But are now, any of them making vital music?
What is vital? Okay. What is vital? Okay. So we both were, we were talking about this a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
Should we play the Wayne verse on the Benny the Butcher song?
Yeah.
All right. It's so Big Dog. This is Benny the Butcher, Lil Wayne. The butcher. I shoot you, here, jug you. The mupee on the blooker. That's the Uzi with the shusher. The doobies looking fuller and the jewels be full of boogers. Diamonds cover the watch face like a Sunni and a Muslim. Got the hoochies and the hookers with the booties in the bosom. Snipers like Kevin Durant. Shooters be like Devin Booker. I'm a black soprano. When I listen to that, now, to your point, obviously, I'm familiar with the lore of Lil Wayne, and I'm like, ah, that reminds me sort of like 07 Wayne. Now, I happen to know 07 Wayne. I happen to be there during that time period. I also interviewed Wayne a bunch prior to the mixtape run.
How old are you, John?
That's totally, man, we all need to look in the mirror. We all need to pull an Andre. Someone should give me a flute before this episode's out. But I listened to this. I still derive thrill from it.
Sure.
Pleasure.
Yeah. Like Shameless season 5.
It's fine. but also what's interesting to me is that a song like this, a verse like this, somehow still feels relatively modern.
Yeah.
And that I think is striking when someone can have a style or an innovation that doesn't feel dated. Now, when I listen to some of these future throwaway verses about hooks about Chanel and whatever, like these are not timeless. These feel like rehash. They don't feel like of them. To me, they don't feel, except for the, how do you say the soccer player's name? Mbappe.
Mbappe.
The Mbappe remix?
Yeah.
Mbappe good. Remix goes.
Yeah.
That one goes. Hundreds of thousands or more. I'm spending galore. Copping new diamond for sure. Spending new money for sure. 680 Maybach for sure. Do what I say, that's for sure. Took margaritas and play by the show for the one I adore. Ain't taking shorts. Proud of me, Glock on me, ready for war. A lot of that stuff feels rehashy to me, but Wayne seems like someone who is managing to maintain a sense of vitality.
And I do think in part that's because of his obsession with rapping as a craft and with the English language, which, like, more power to him. And I think that's fine. But I am still looking for what you are presuming can exist, which is like, quote unquote, grown man rap. Like, I wrote about Killer Mike this year. He made an album called Michael, nominated for a Grammy. It's a really good adult rapping. He's mining his family history. You know, he's talking about fatherhood. He's talking about faith. Like, I get it. And same thing with this new Danny Brown album, right? Like, people are obsessed with this idea that Danny Brown is now a mature rapper, which is like just, but again, it's just Danny Brown talking about when he got famous the first time. Like, it's just extending plot for a character you already know. And it's not changing my idea of like what rap is or what rap can be. And when I...
But if people are tapping out, this is what I'm saying. And this is why the Andre thing to me is frustrating. Because if people are tapping out because they perceive that being of a certain age means you can't participate or shouldn't participate, then the art form itself withers. And this is why, like, during that moment in the early 2010s...
There's always going to be teenagers, though.
No, I understand. But during that moment in the early 2010s, when the first Rock Marciano breakout moment, the Ka breakout moment... That was an idea. That was a moment where I was like, ah, here is an idea of rapping and presentation of rap music that I genuinely don't think a young person could have delivered.
I agree.
That was something that I think you had to have lived a lot of life. You had to have had some losses. You had to have had a sense of triumph and failure to come back on the other side with a remade version of what the genre could do. That, to me, that's 444.
Yeah, I mean, Rock Marciano is a good answer and maybe one that undermines my original sort of trolly take that all early music is better than all late music, because he's basically like a crime fiction writer. He's like Elmore Leonard, you know what I mean?
Comics.
And it's like, which is like, that's cool and I'm open to that. But even that to me has a sell-by date. And I guess I just wonder, like, I mean, it's certainly not ever going to be the dominant form of the genre. It's like it's nostalgia. Like, are you sitting there listening to these Nas Hit-Boy albums? No. Like, because people love these, and these get thrown around as examples too.
Who's people?
That's what I mean. I'm like, but people who love Nas love hearing Nas rap over Hit-Boy beats.
Any song that I've heard off those albums are like eminently serviceable, like fill in the blank, paint by numbers Nas songs, and that's. Those are still pretty good because Nas is a rapper.
But for what?
No, I don't disagree.
For the 401k.
In the big picture of the thing, for the Grammys, really, yeah. is what, yeah. I mean, like, that's rap Grammy era.
Yeah.
Like, if ever there was rap Grammy era. But to me, the more albums like that foreclose on the possibility that someone might make an album like a Ka album, like an early Ka album, or like whatever Andre might show up and do. Like, I remember being really struck. I mean, this is, I mean, forgive me, but like, there was like an extremely random Big Daddy Kane kind of like a live band, like funk album that I thought this was like in early 2010s. And I was like, this is a good album. Now it's an album for older people. Like, kids are not going to listen to this record, but it's an interesting evolutionary take on like how this guy raps, what kind of music he's in dialogue with. You know, it's like, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's like, there's a certain style of rapper, especially New York rapper, who like once or twice a year will do three nights at the Blue Note. That's like the bad version of it. But like, to me, like, that's like the bad version of what this Big Daddy Kane record, even though I did see him do it at the Blue Note. But I think there's opportunity. I just hate it when people say, like, it reminds me of people dismissing the vast range of potential creativity of the genre as a whole. It reminds me of like regional tribalism of people in New York be like, there couldn't possibly be stylistic innovations coming from the West Coast or from the South. I feel like I am old enough to have lived through enough frameworks of people being like, hip hop can't do this, hip hop can't do that, hip hop can't grow in this way, can't develop. And every time the genre has proven those people wrong, it was very strange to see Andre of all people be like, it's a young man's game.
Well, it's interesting also that it came from Andre because he still is a good rapper. I was thinking about, you know, when this came out, I was thinking about Ben's Friends, like when he appears with Future. That's many, many years ago, but he's on this Killer Mike album I'm talking about, and he has a verse on Song Scientists and Engineers, yep. which is quite profound. It's right. His line is like, I wish I had some scientists and engineer friends. That's like, that's something that an old person can be rapping about.
Older listeners, by and large, I think are less curious listeners. And the idea that they might want to be challenged in a new and novel way rather than reassured through the lens of nostalgia, whether by listening to, because I was thinking a lot about like oldies rap radio, like K-Day or whatever. And it's like, where's the rap radio station for middle-aged rappers to just deliver?
Shade 45. I mean, you said it.
I did say it. But you know what I mean? Like, I think most rap, you know, people just want to have a certain pleasure center activated. So I think that's part of what's at play too. But I would hope also as rap fans age and develop, there may be more openness to a wider range of solutions for the middle-aged rap fan.
Let's listen to a little bit about that.
Communication coming in. Too much that I can't communicate with all of them. I do wish I had scientists or engineer friends. Let's go. Get out of here. Petrol is cheaper than it's ever been. And then, who's to say when art will end? All I know is when the portrait painted, better have your portion of the rent. A dollar more and you will get upgraded. When you think you've made it, you are then. Just tolerated, overrated, hope I'm 80 when I get my second win.
This podcast is supported by Reimagining Democracy for a Good Life. A podcast that asks, how do we build a radically inclusive, thriving, multiracial democracy? Longtime equity advocate Angela Glover Blackwell looks at movement, struggle, and progress in Los Angeles to see what it can teach the nation about building a democracy that represents everyone. Reimagining Democracy for a Good Life is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julie Turkowitz. I'm a reporter at the New York Times. I have been trying to understand changes in migration. So I traveled with photographer Federico Rios to the Darien Gap, this hot, mountainous, 70-mile stretch of jungle straddling the border of Colombia and Panama.
We're hiking through a river, just like covered in mud.
Many used to think that this route was impassable, but thousands have been risking their lives to pass through the Darien, almost all in the hopes of making it to the United States. We spent 9 days hiking through the gap and weeks building trust and relationships with migrants, with smugglers, with migration authorities to even be able to do this reporting. We interviewed hundreds of people who have made this journey to try and grasp what's making them go to these lengths to find a new life. New York Times journalists spend time in these places to help you understand what's really happening there. You can support this kind of journalism by subscribing to the New York Times.
part of the reason we're talking about Future and Rick Ross and Meek Mill and Nas and everybody else we've just Wayne.
Yeah.
And is because no one has taken their place.
It's weird, right?
It's weird. And there is this vacuum in contemporary hip hop.
Yeah. Stardom has changed.
Stardom has changed. Rap is in many, many different little niches. And they're not that often working their way back into the mainstream, at least this year or for the last couple of years.
Certainly not in the way that things used to happen.
Even like 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I mean.
Yeah. Okay, so we're sitting here, Jack Harlow's Lovin' On Me, which we talked about a couple episodes ago. It did make its way to the top of the Billboard Hot 100.
Did what it was supposed to do.
Doja Cat has some big rap songs this year.
We perceive them as big rap songs. I don't know if the universe perceives them as big rap songs.
They are popular songs, and they are also rapping, if you listen closely.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, they are rap songs. If you have to acknowledge that, they are popular.
Yes. And then there's this guy, Drake, who we've talked about. He was, you know, one of the people hogging up all the oxygen in our conversation about pop music.
Yep.
He remains one of the people hogging up all the oxygen when we talk about rap music.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But then we did the same thing we did with the pop charts. We took a scroll down the Billboard.
Yep.
And I want to just run through some names for you.
I would love to hear them.
Okay. You got Lovin' On Me by Jack Harlow. You got Doja Cat, SZA. Drake, Gunna, same song all year.
Yep.
You have Tyla, Water, Drake. There's only a couple names on here
that are not the obvious. Yeah.
Mount Rushmore of contemporary rap music. Travis Scott is on here with that song I Know, which is like the fakest of all fake rap hits.
Yep.
Okay. That Doechii track we talked about,
right?
With Kodak.
Mm-hmm.
Nicki Minaj, Barbie Girl. I mean, like, all, like, this
remakes is, also, like, the perniciousness of remakes.
Like, we are stuck.
Yeah.
We are stuck. The name on here the most times was not Drake. It's a guy by the name of Rod Wave.
Most popular.
The most popular rapper in America is a singer.
Yes. Absolutely right. Rod Wave, I don't love the new album as much as the previous albums. Like, the Turks and Caicos song, I really think is not right.
That's the one with 21 Savage.
Yeah,
that's on here.
Yeah, it's not that good. Girls, 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 girls all over the world.
The world. Love, she's a real deal diva, molding an Instagram model. Bad bitches love reposado, drinking out a bottle. I don't usually try and shoot no shots, but I can pass on a...
Last three Rod Wave albums prior to this, I think, are all like minimum B plus, like some of them A minus and A. Like Rod Wave is, I think, you talk about paying rap to the degree that that's a thing. Young Boy, Rod Wave, etc.
Some Dirk.
Yeah. Like Rod Wave, I obviously is the purest singer out of that group. I think in a lot of the early stuff that I was writing about him, you know, there's a lot of blues. It's like, it feels like as close as you can get to contemporary blues,
right?
Is Rod Wave.
With like no cap up there.
Yes, absolutely. It's weird. I think this album is the one where he's like a little bit more like, what if I made like a slightly more, it's like Mary J. Blige, like making positive records. And people were like, what? That's weird.
You consider this a positive Rod Wave album?
Well, I mean, it's like
relatively
it's inching in that direction. Yeah. Yes. I think with Rod Wave, like 10 to 20% optimism is like, that's inching that direction. Rod Wave.
Do you consider Rod Wave a rapper?
I haven't.
You've considered him a singer with rap cadences?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's right. But he's a good rap. Like when he's putting words together that rhyme, like he's very good at it. He can flow. But I agree. It's like 60-40 singer.
Yeah. I mean, I think his primary mode is melody. And it's not melody in the sense that like Young Thug's mode is melody. I think Rod Wave is like much more classically attached to like 4/4 structures. Like, I think he's going from the line, the way that his syllables move is like much softer. I think he imposes a cadence onto words rather than imposes words onto a cadence.
Okay.
Which to me is where the line falls.
So the most popular Rod Wave song
on the charts.
It's not. Is it the Turks and Caicos?
Right now. It's not, actually. Okay. That's the
second one. Oh, it's Great Gatsby.
It is Great Gatsby, which I think is interesting for two reasons. One, it's called Great Gatsby. And the conceit is I threw a party for everyone, but it was only for you. That's a good luck. That's a good,
it's a good idea.
Summation of the Great Gatsby. Do we think that he's a Fitzgerald guy or a Baz Luhrmann guy? Neither.
Or a Wikipedia,
a Wikipedia guy?
Probably movie. I'm going to go movie.
He could be a big Leo fan. You could see it.
Yeah.
You could see it.
is this where we play the Leo rapping Dwick footage from TMZ? Yes.
Leo.
Talk about Shade 4-5 listeners. Leonardo DiCaprio rapping Dwick as captured by TMZ. Definitely Shade 4-5 was playing in the truck on the way back to the house.
The other thing that I like about Great Gatsby, which I learned on TikTok, is that
you about the book or the movie?
the song. The song.
Okay. Yeah. Go off.
Broadway likes a sad sample. In fact, this album, the first voice you hear on this album is Kelly Zutrow, a musician and friend of mine from Wet.
A
sample from Wet is the opening bars on the Broadway album, which I never expected in my life.
Did by Kelly Home Upstate?
I hope so.
Yeah.
And this one has something similar. So I was like, what is the sample from Great Gatsby? I didn't recognize it. And it turns out it's a girl who recorded as a vocal sample for a potential Rod Wave song. It's a type sample. Yeah, it's a Rod Wave type sample.
Where was it? Where did he find it?
I think one of his producers sourced, I need a vocal hook that I can sample and make sad for Rod Wave. So we'll play a little bit
of that. Incredible.
Yeah. This is they got production down to a science.
Absolutely.
You know? Okay. Couple other names on this chart. Sexy Red. I want to talk about the sort of ceiling that we've seemed to run into for what is obviously a very rich and diverse crop of young female
rappers. Yeah.
Sexy Red, of course, quite raunchy. It's part of the value
proposition.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A lot of there's a term for this kind of rap that we're not going to say on the pod, a colloquial shorthand.
DM Joe for more.
Yeah. Look, Sexy Red, biggest rapper
Link
of the year,
bio.
Biggest rising rapper of the year, maybe.
Yeah.
Arguably.
Yeah.
And yet not that popular, not on the Megan level, not on the Cardi level, achieving that sort of. Those women got crowned quite quickly. And yet for this next generation, we're not really seeing that upward mainstream momentum. It's a much slower build.
That's interesting. I don't know if I agree. Certainly not as famous as Cardi. The Megan thing is interesting because I think I would venture to say that Sexy Red is more popular than Megan Thee Stallion, certainly right now.
Fine.
And maybe even at peak Megan Thee Stallion era outside of WAP, which is like a one of one sort of astronomical thing that really only happens once in any artist's career. I think there is a social and cultural ubiquity to Megan Thee Stallion, but not a musical ubiquity to Megan Thee Stallion.
Yes.
Whereas Sexy Red has maybe the opposite thing, which is I think there is actually something of a musical ubiquity coming, which is to say, as you predicted many, many, many weeks ago, ski yee becoming catchphrase and sports teams and so on and so forth. Obviously, Pound Town, huge viral hit, and I think is informing a tremendous amount of like online sentiment about Sexy Red and awareness. I think so many people are aware of Sexy Red, but Sexy Red is not, I mean, outside of like going on Drake dates and doing, you know, I saw Sexy Red at Irving Plaza recently, very fun show. Sexy Red is also pregnant and like maybe about to go off tour if she hasn't finished tour already to give birth and take a few months off. I don't get the sense that whatever the kind of like celebrity, like the way that there is now a media ecosystem that takes young female rappers, especially like Ice Spice, for example. And Ice Spice is maybe the only counter argument to Sexy Red.
Even though that feels like a million years.
It does feel like a million years. But there's an entire media ecosystem that's ready to do stories about Ice Spice or news blurbs or blog posts or whatever that Sexy Red hasn't quite taken advantage of or hasn't quite hit Sexy Red. It does feel like the hottest mixtape.
That's what I mean. It's like most like chart, like Ski Yee peaked at number 17 on the hot R&B and
hip-hop crazy
chart.
That's nuts.
There's like there's a certain reticence to like, and maybe it's just because she's going to wait until the album comes out and they'll sand down a couple of the edges and whatever. But it's like when we're talking about this lack of sort of momentum and mainstream crossover star, and maybe it's just that someone like Sexy Red doesn't need that.
But Sexy Red's success reminds me a lot of like, let's call it like Kodak Black's success in like the mid to late 2010s. And like, if you had said to me in like 2017, someday Kodak Black will be doing like editorial features in European fashion magazines, I'd be like, are you sure, bro? You sure about that? But I was literally just on Instagram over the weekend and Office Magazine, it's like very forward thinking, but like Office Magazine there's like behind the scenes footage of a Kodak Black shoot from an Office Magazine. And I'm like, it took 6 years. It took whatever had to happen to get Kodak to a place where he was ready to do that. Maybe Sexy Red's fame is more that, where it remains ubiquitous amongst the faithful and the most like astute and the astute followers. But maybe that mainstream thing is something that she wants to keep at bay, or it will happen eventually. Whereas I thought Megan got kind of like mainstreamed up into that very, very fast, but the music didn't always follow.
I do think it's actually beneficial that some of these young women in rap like build careers and have hits that come on the back of these careers, as opposed to having one huge hit and then everything else falling somewhere under that.
Like, yeah,
I think this is a healthier way to build a career, the Sexy Red model. One thing I will say to Sexy Red's credit in terms of cultural ubiquity is that there is also a Pound Town response song on these charts.
There sure is.
It's talking about 310 Babies, Soak City.
Another satellite radio smanger.
Can we play like 10 clean seconds of the song?
If we can you find 10 clean seconds of this song?
Right, let me see you do it, left, do it, right, 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 do it, left, do it, left.
You play it on satellite radio, edited or unedited?
Pretty sure it was unedited. I don't think satellite radio is edited.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's unedited. All right. So anyway, this song, who's the artist name? 310.
Exactly.
Yeah, 310 Baby?
Yeah.
Yeah.
B-A-B-I-I.
Yeah. So this song was getting played like every 20 minutes on whatever normal, not Shade 4 vibe, like, you know, Hip Hop Nation 44 or whatever. You know how regional hits don't feel regional anymore?
Sure. Like, so depending on what they are.
Yeah, but this feels like a regional hit, but that exists to be sort of like mainstream.
Really? Because to me, it just feels like the same as Lil Boothang, just like dirty. You know,
it's
like Kidz Bop, but dirty.
Oh, that's crazy. It's like
machine generated, like algo.
No.
Created.
Do we know much about the artist?
I do not.
I don't know. I don't know much about the artist. Either.
I just think if your big hit is a response song,
tell that to Roxanne Shanté.
Different
tell
era.
Tell that to Roxanne Shanté.
Different era.
Go read the 50 Rappers package.
It still exists.
Still exists.
Online.
Hey.
You like this
Award-winning.
Song?
Award-winning.
Internally. You like this song? Or it's this is a thing. It's like it's a wallpaper. It's like yeah, it doesn't exist.
I would say like is not exactly the right word. Like I never, here's the thing. Every time it came on the radio, I was always like, huh, what's this? But that happened.
And you knew every time.
But like 5 times, I had the same exact reaction, which is like it never quite stuck with me.
Okay, so that's number 26.
Yeah.
And this chart goes to 50. If you scroll from 26 to 50,
yeah,
the only artists that I haven't mentioned are Chris Brown, who are also on here. Chris Brown, Travis Scott, Ice Spice, Rick Ross, 2 Chainz, Lil Wayne, Nicki Minaj, Youngboy. It's just like Drake again.
How have we gotten this far without talking about Youngboy?
Big X, The Plug. Because Youngboy is not that popular right now. Youngboy's putting out so much music.
It's in a down period.
That none of it is like extremely popular because he's so deep in just like expunging whatever demons are inside him. But there's 2 songs I want to mention on here. One, because it's there's a challenge, there's a TikTok challenge, which continues to be a way that songs get popular. And one, which is essentially reality TV rap, which is social media reality rap.
Oh, are we going to go there?
Lil Mabu and Krishan Rock, Mr. Take Ya B. Take her for a trip, fly her to New York, sign my name all on her tits. Yes, I took his lady. I like blue faces, so I took his babies. And no, this not a diss, but I know Wack 100 ain't gonna like this. This is a song about Blueface?
Sure.
This is like a plot-driven song.
Yeah, talk about Lil Wayne could learn something from Lil Mabu about storytelling.
Yikes.
Yes. Yes, this is
but I don't want to hear that. This doesn't need to be on the charts. This is not music.
No, but this is like when we were talking a few weeks ago about that era of like YouTubers making rap songs. It's like, but Lil Mabu like actually raps. No, he actually raps.
But like you never
came out with Didi Osama
as like music.
Maybe you, but if you were like 13, like if you're 13
and you're invested 15, in who the mother of Blueface's children are,
you're invested in like what kind of like has the most sticky scroll ability. But like if you're 13, how do you know the difference between this and 310 Baby or Yeet or Travis Scott? Like they're not being presented as different. And if anything, this is the song that you probably know better than any of those other songs.
It's also like 1 minute and 43 seconds or something, right? Which is exactly as long as it needs to be.
I mean, look, it exists. Look, Mabu is someone who wrote a song, assuming that it's written. I mean,
someone wrote it.
Understanding that there is a 4-bar window in which to create a viral challenge or a dance on TikTok. Take your bitch,
take her for a trip. Oh, I didn't even know this one had a dance.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I'm doing. Oh. That was the move. That's I don't what that know was.
The dance. I don't know the dance. I blocked this from my algo.
Those lines, much like the first lines of the Jack Harlow song, are designed to have someone apply a dance to it. And it's been interesting over the last, I mean, it's kind of over now, I think, but like, let's say 3 or 4 weeks as people have like refined what the quote unquote dance is, you know, figuring it out, like kind of in group workshopping over TikTok. But that's what that song exists for. That song exists so that all those people on TikTok can improvise the dance and figure out what it is. And then you saw he was on stage at the Garden with Fabio. Go into that. 15,000 people absolutely losing it. That's it right now. That's stardom.
Wow. Yeah. Dark. And then you get a song like Surround Sound by Jid, 21 Savage, Baby Tate. This is a song.
That's the one that.
That's the TikTok challenge that I was talking about.
Yeah.
So this one.
To be fair, we talked about this the other day. Like this one had missed.
You didn't know this.
Totally.
So this is, and this is the problem with contemporary rap stardom. 2 people whose job it is to pay attention to this stuff. Sometimes it just misses you. You can only pay attention to so much. And however your feed is curated, like I was telling you, we're going to get to this, but like all I've been doing for the past 3 weeks is reading tweets about Caribou. You didn't even know who Caribou was.
Yeah,
it's like, again, this is our job. That this is where we're at. This is a song, this JID song that came out of nowhere. It'd been out like a year, 2 years, who knows? I don't know. He's from Atlanta. He signed to Dreamville. He's a J. Cole guy. And then all of a sudden people started taping their iPhones on the ceiling.
Crazy.
And dancing under them to this JID song, which led to some great tweets, which is like, why are you throwing ass to Kendrick Lamar? Because JID may or may not sound a little bit like Kendrick Lamar sometimes. But people have also gotten quite creative with this. Like, I thought the meme was to show your body from a bird's eye view, but some people have made it much more family friendly. There's like people dancing around in circles, like construction workers with like a bodega cat. You know, there's some nice versions of this. And then there's the joke versions where it looks like a girl is about to twerk to it. And then it cuts to like a preacher or something saying you should find Jesus.
Push the fucking pack off of the porch or break a pound down. Get the scrap if it happen to blow, it makes a round sounds. Pussy cat on my lap, push it back and go to town down. Putting rap on my back and I'm black and snatching crowns.
So, you know, I don't know, but like this song, is this a good rap song? I don't know. Is it a good rap song?
Outside of the context of everything you just described?
Yeah, it's
fine.
It's fine.
It's not a song that I think would have stuck around in any other context.
Without a challenge.
Yeah, and also like you kind of wonder.
Without the phone on the ceiling challenge.
But also like, why is this song the right soundtrack to that challenge?
No idea.
Like the arbitrariness of the relationship between the song and the challenge. Like that's something that I think.
But that goes back to Black Beatles. It's like nothing about the like.
No, no, of course. But I think that's like, I think people, whoever is still trying to game TikTok.
Yeah.
Like, that's actually the hardest part. The hardest part, it's not like, damn, I wish we had a catchy hook. Like, anything could be a catchy hook, yeah. Which is what we've learned over, like, 3 years of TikTok trends. Pretty much anything can go. So it's not so much about the music itself. It's how do you stick an unexpected video challenge onto an audio thing that maybe, like, the Mabu thing is designed for that. But the JID thing is not designed for that. So whoever figured that out, whether they were paid by the label or not, kudos to them.
I agree. Okay, the other person who's on this chart kind of a lot, despite having, I would say, a weak year, is Travis Scott.
Okay.
Fiend is the other big Travis Scott song at the moment, the one with the cool Playboy Cardi verse.
Crazy shot, having Henny deep in. She not in the scene. She's trying to go.
My main Travis Scott input this year are TikToks of people being like, I can't believe how cheap Travis Scott tickets are. You've seen these?
Yes.
On SeatGeek right now, and look how cheap these tickets are. For Travis Scott's first show of his Circus Maximus tour, it's looking as cheap as $10.
This podcast is supported by Americans United for Separation of Church and State.
Americans United defends your freedom to live as yourself and believe as you choose, so long as you don't harm others. Core freedoms like abortion rights, marriage equality, public education, and even democracy itself rest upon the wall of separation between church and state. Christian nationalists are attacking these fundamental freedoms. Americans United is fighting back. Freedom without favor and equality without exception. Learn more about AU's work at au.org/NYT.
So something's going on with the tour. I don't totally understand it. We'll get Cesario on it. I guess resellers bought a lot of tickets and demand was not what it seemed to be, allegedly. Don't sue me. And now, 2 days before the show, 3 days before the show, 2 hours before the show, you want a pretty decent Travis Scott ticket. You could probably get it in secondary markets, at least, for $10.
Or tertiary markets. This is something we've seen with rap tours over the last 12 months or so, where like there was this huge demand coming out of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Ticket prices were insane, you know, stuff like the Drake and 21 Savage tour. And then rappers like Lil Baby or Lil Durk or Travis Scott, like they've had to fight back a lot online to be like, look how crowded my show is, because there are these screenshots that go viral of like, you know, you're in Delaware and you want to see Travis Scott and like you your said, tickets like are like 100
tickets for 10 bucks.
Yeah. Mm. Do you think that that is part of this moment of sort of like, where is the center of rap music and what are we doing?
Yeah, I also think that Travis specifically, Rod Wave's a slightly different proposition to me, but Travis specifically, obviously here's a person who's coming off the Astroworld tragedy who has to re-solidify himself as not just a live performer where it's safe to go, but who is also viable. There's a business is on the line here because people want, if Travis can't fill an arena, that the entire proposition falls out the bottom. And so I think some of it is that. I also think, okay, is Travis Scott a popular rapper? Is Travis Scott a rapper? Like, this is something I was grappling with a lot over the last few days.
He's a merch dealer.
He's a merch dealer. I think he's an EDM artist. Like, I think EDM is not like a term that I use. Like, it's like obviously like a fake term that became a real term. But as I was listening to the Travis songs that are on the charts and on Rap Caviar and then went back to listen to some other stuff, you know, it's an album I've heard. This is not the best Travis Scott album at all, but.
You don't love Utopia?
Sorry. My apologies.
I just imagining who that guy is.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
It's like the guy, there was like some, I forget the TikTok where they interview someone who has like the Cactus Jack logo tattooed on him. Like that guy, like breaking through the door right now. You
don't want Utopia. One time I called out a guy for wearing a Houston Astros hat in New York. This was right after the cheating scandal. Don't worry about it. I was like, oh, like, you're going to wear that?
Like a rando?
Bar? Yeah, yeah. I don't like the Astros. This was a moment where this was acceptable. And he was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And I was like, your hat. And he's like, oh, it's a Travis Scott hat. It's like,
that's worse. No,
it's a Houston Astros
hat. Actually worse. That's actually like a war. That's the worst answer you can get.
Anyway, were talking about how Travis Scott sounds.
Can I also just say apologies to Bun B for the Astros slander if you're watching? Apologies. I'm sorry. I can't.
Bun B knows the Astros cheated.
I just can't. Let's stop. Stop. So I was trying to listen to Utopia with a different ear than I listened to it when it came out. Travis Scott is let's not call him a rapper right now. Travis Scott is an artist whose primary contribution / weaponry is sound and texture. And the way that he has deployed different sonic frequencies and like burrs
and beat switches
and low ends and so on and so forth. That to me is actually what Travis Scott is really useful for.
Pinterest, would you say?
What's that?
Human Pinterest?
As someone has said, yes. But to me, that is the thing that he's excelling at. And as we're going to talk about a little bit later, helping to set into motion an entire micro generation or multiple micro generations of artists who see that as what hip hop is supposed to do. Not rapping or bars or whatever, or like, not about vocals, certainly not about content, maybe about vocal texture a little bit. But the Utopia record to me is a collection of rumbles. It's like, this is like extremely random and abstract, but like, you know about these like car speaker competitions?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where it's like just like low tones, yeah. Da, 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 and there's like occasional albums of that kind of stuff. Yeah. It's sort of almost in that vein of thing where like, if you just play the first 10 seconds of any of these songs, or if the album was just the first 10 seconds of the song, you'd get 90% of the information that you need to get about Travis Scott. And I think his success set into motion almost everything we're probably going to talk about for the rest of the episode.
Yeah, so that's why I think Fiend is such an interesting record in this regard. One, it's with Playboi Carti and sort of joins their two
yes.
versions of what we might call rage music.
Harrington Child.
And the way, like cousin and cousin.
Okay.
You think Travis Scott is the father of Playboi Carti?
Uncle and nephew. How about that?
Is Travis Scott the uncle?
Yes.
Or is Playboi Carti, he's like one of those uncles that's actually younger than the nephew. No, but so what they're doing with Fiend Live is the is Travis is playing it like over and over and over again, which as some sort of like endurance test, like mosh pit challenge, whatever, which like it makes sense that this is the song that he's doing it for. And it makes sense that he's doing that because it's not like, oh, no, we have to get to, you know, my third verse on whatever, whatever deep cut. It's like, no, we should just find the most like hell raising part of my catalog and just
again,
do it over and over again. I mean, well, we should watch a little bit of Travis doing that live of trying to make Fiend times 10 a thing.
This would be a really good thing if we did like a quick cut to the set, but like all the chairs were tough and all the chairs were like over toppled and just like the mics were like thrown against the wall.
Okay. Travis, Playboi Carti, Yeet.
Remember Yeet?
Big rapper.
For a time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Influential rapper.
Like extremely influential, like hit at the exact right moment in the pandemic where I think people were locked in and just sort of being like, what's a new thing? And like all of a sudden, there was just all this energy coalesced around Yeet. And Yeet is someone who I think took the kind of Carti blueprint, deepened it, made it a little bit more like less gothic and more theatrical and maybe even a little bit more fun. And then that becomes a thing that an entire kind of like one or two generations after that run with. A lot of the music that, you know, we're going to talk about kind of like Rage 3.0 or just noise rap or whatever, you know, whatever our friends at No Bells are talking about.
Yeah, go to that website.
Yeah, go to
Google
No Bells.
No Bells. Read about some underground rap music.
It's great stuff. But a lot of that just feels like started with Yeet.
Yes. And with like Benny X and working on Dying and producer like, group.
Mm-hmm. But it's texture rap.
And I do think we're in this interesting place where the undergrounds, however you want to use that term, have really splintered, right? You're thinking of the rap underground right now. Maybe you're talking about like Earl and Alchemist and Mike and Navy Blue. I don't know. Like maybe you're talking about like that underground.
Like Larry June.
Yeah, Larry June, right? People like this, Armand Hammer, you know, like people that I'm sure there are people listening to this episode, like ripping.
When
like,
are they going to?
Yeah, and they're
Billy
like,
Billy Woods.
Yeah, and they're like, Billy, well, like rap is in a great place, like Billy Woods, you know, which like, fine. Like, yes, if you're into it, like they're not the Travis Scott guy, but they're similar to the Travis Scott guy.
And in many ways, I think it is sort of like Shade 4-5 with a PhD.
Yeah. Like, or young Shade 4-5.
Right. But sort of like the kind of like I grew up on that. But like here's the like lightly refined artistic version of it.
Which cool. OK, then you have like the Drill Underground, which
has anyone mentioned Shade 4-5 this much in contemporary rap criticism in the last 10 years?
Give us a show. We can syndicate Deluxe on Shade 4-5.
Actually, like low key, not a terrible idea.
Call us.
Yeah, seriously, not terrible. Can you imagine if that's our come up?
Then there's the drill scenes across the entire world.
Of course.
Continuing to run into the ceiling of criminal.
Sonic scabrousness and also just.
Like problems with the law and fear of problems with the law. Mm-hmm. So that is self-contained sort of by nature of what's going on. Although we talked about this a little bit before we taped, but the
Cash Cobain,
rapping Andre a little bit on Andre 3000, like that's a nice moment of sexy drill plus Andre 3000 flute music. We listened to a second of that.
Just before we go on, while you're mentioning the Cash Cobain thing, like I'm actually been pretty surprised that we haven't seen a bunch of rappers like actually proactively trying to rap on these Andre 3000 songs.
Would have been a good long weekend to do that.
I mean, seriously. So there was a good tweet by Gene Doe Music, who says, y'all think Andre 3000 gonna be mad when I put a 64 bar verse on one of these flute songs?
I don't think so.
We're waiting.
Yeah.
No, and also, like, just to circle it up, show Andre 3000 what you can do.
So you can only rap on these beats if you're over 40. Is that what you're saying?
Or what? I don't know how old this person is.
Okay, fair enough. Anyway, the third sort of segment of what I think of when I think of underground hip hop at the moment is what we were getting at. This sort of rage.
I forget you doing like this about Armand Hammer.
I was inhabiting a character.
You really were.
There's this rage 3.0 noise rap stuff. We mentioned Nobel's legitimately good website for covering happening beneath Rap Caviar and the Billboard rap chart that we just read off of. They have a new column that's Mono and Milan. The future of rap is noisy as hell.
Yes.
And like, I clicked through some of these SoundCloud links. Man, it is noisy as hell.
It sure is. And somehow we both landed on the same guy.
The future of rap.
Yes. Don't quote the future of rap.
I mean,
fine, quote him, whatever.
But then you have to quote all this part too.
Yeah, sure. So we both landed on the same guy who is Netspend.
Yes. The same child who is Netspend.
Yes, I don't know how old Netspend is. So Netspend has had a bunch of like viral TikTok snippets over the last few months. I spent a long car ride this weekend, like playing the whole catalog and also like Netspend Radio, which is just like, I mean, some algorithmically generated, if you like, RIYL type stuff. Netspend, I think, is really good, but it sounds
strong. You should come out strong.
Yeah. No,
pro I think it's Netspend.
Good. Yeah, yes. Pro Netspend.
This is like, to be clear, this is like a skinny white teenager.
Yes. Who? Sure.
Who has gone viral both for his music and for people being like, are we sure we want to let rap music
be this? Right. Well, if you're an Armand Hammer type, like this seems, this must be like the apocalypse.
Yeah.
But I also think like in these, like whatever we're going to call it, Rage 3.0 circle, like this, nothing unusual about this in that context. Right.
And there's a little bit of hyper pop here. There's some gexiness to this music. Yeah, I mean,
and also like, to go back to what I was saying about Travis, and I think this is where Travis into Gex, into hyperpop, the fact that it's textural actually forgives is maybe the wrong word, but it essentially forgives a whole bunch of like, who knows what they're talking about, you know, and whether the vocal content and subject matter, who knows? And when I was going through, eventually we'll talk a little bit more, but I was going through the sort of like radio station, there's actually stuff that came up that was like far more clean and melodic and sort of like took some influence from this world, but like kind of like rescued it a little bit and like put a little bit of sunshine on it. But Netspend, I think, is good. And I think it's like we're also overlooking SoundCloud 1.0, although I guess technically it would be 2.0 if you're a Sash Holla Waterboys era fan, but like Peep X and like the particular ways in which melody and distortion were kind of like yanked into hip hop in that era. It's so striking because I remember thinking even in like early Juice WRLD, just being like, it's crazy that people are taking that stuff for granted. Like that's the starting point. And now it's like you have an entire micro scenes that just never lived in a time where Peep and Uzi weren't influential artists.
And Cardi.
And Cardi,
they're
for sure.
Only influential artists to a lot of these kids.
Yeah.
And yet they're taking it in like pretty extreme abstract direction. You mentioned some of it is quite poppy and melodic. And then there's stuff like there's this Xavier So based song, Upper West, that I played for you before we started, which like we're just gonna play a little bit.
We haven't even played a Netspend song. All right, play that.
This is a 51-second song, and this is what it sounds like. So Xavier So Based is in the second viral clip of Netspend dancing on stage, where someone was like, this is going to be a legendary video in a few years. And like, LOL, but like
sure.
Yes, I think so.
Probably.
Yes. So where are you at with Netspend? If you were going to introduce a new listener to Netspend and you didn't want to play the video, the controversial video where he's flexing with money in his parents' bathroom, what would you play them?
That's what we're going to do with snacks.
Yeah, we're going to do snacks.
Snacks in our parents' bathrooms. okay, so the most recent one is drink.
Okay.
But that's actually not the one. I kind of want to play a different one, which is funnier, but it's all one word. F fun.
Is your song of the week?
I feel like, are these songs of the week? Is that what we're doing?
Ish.
Okay. Let's say this is song of the week. But I also want to talk about a couple other things from this universe. But this can be the song of the week. This is Nets Ben, Funny. I'm with Zuda, been a kite, rolling out a blunt. I'm with Zusi in a kite, rolling out a blunt. I skip the test because I should ask. I'm doing something fun. I'm in VA, I'm with my brothers. They say I'm the one. I told her, hold on for a second. She won't have to suck. Light 12 rounds, bitch, light 12. As I was mentioning a minute ago, when I was going through this sort of algorithmically generated pathway, it was sending me over and over again to a kid called Evils, who I think now goes by Jadis. And then there's also music on Spotify by Jadis Archive. So we're now like over the course of like 12 months, he's got three different artist names.
That's lore, baby.
That is absolutely. Like, who else was who's doing that besides like Detroit techno artists?
Lil B was doing something like that for a time.
To me, the Evils stuff, which appears to be the retired moniker, was the most interesting blend of like pure melody, but also like still pulling stuff. No idea if this person's in actual dialogue with Netsmen and.
But according to your algorithm.
Fresh Boy Swag and Xavier, so a bit like, you know, Samasan. Like, I don't know if it's all that or if it's a totally different kid. Anyway, there's a bunch of good Evils songs. I'm actually low key surprised. Like, this seems like a person who could write pop hits someday, like an actual, like if I was like a low to mid-level A&R, like this is the person I'd be throwing in the studio with like Tate McRae.
We'll come back to Tate McRae.
So this is, let's play, this is Be Like Me by Evils. Think I put a spell on his bitch. Now her boyfriend wanna be like me. Now her boyfriend wanna be like me. Just like me, just like me. Now her boyfriend wanna be like me. Ooh, ooh, ooh. It's not necessarily one of the most melodic songs, but it kind of captures the full scope of what I think this person does. Also, there's a good record called Jodeci under the Jadis Archive name, which I also really like. So anyway, that's my rap underground. I do miss the part of my career when like this is all I cared about. Like this is the only type stuff, and I'd just be like digging it up all day long. That's why I'm glad like No Bells exists. That's why I'm glad Underground Sound, which does like has like a video series where like interview a bunch of these guys and
makes you feel old.
First of all, what Andre 3000? I'm not listening to the Andre 3000 flute album. I'm not that old. No, it makes me go listen to them.
Yeah.
Tell me about your youth struggles.
Okay, so I have a few bright spots in hip hop, and they are, you know, up my alley, but new enough.
Yeah.
These are two young women from Atlanta.
Yep.
Rapping both together and apart. I mentioned earlier Caribou.
Yep.
She's the young woman in Yachty's new crew called Concrete Boys.
Yeah.
Some of us are old enough to remember Cody Shane, the original girl in Yachty's crew. On the sailing team.
Also, I need some sailing team merch.
I have a good.
You have the Nautica, like the actual Nautica stuff or the old sailing?
No, but I was with Yachty at the Nautica premiere at Urban Outfitters.
And I was at Icebox one of the days that Yachty came in to work on like a Concrete Boys chain. So much Yachty lore.
Yeah. Anyway, Yachty has Yachty's new crew, history. Concrete Boys, Caribou. She sort of made her big debut on the radar freestyle.
Yep.
She had a song out earlier this year, had some good buzz on YouTube called Box the 40, which is pretty good.
Is she the one that's also in the TikTok videos?
She was on the podcast recently.
Yeah. Okay. That's, I think I knew her through that before this.
You knew her through pods instead of music. That's where we're at in rap music.
Just like us.
Yes.
You never know our day jobs.
There's another girl in Atlanta right now, Anicia. Same thing. She had a song called BRB. She has a really like laconic, deep, slow flow that is very punchy.
Yeah.
And Caribou, same thing, sort of like lax, laid back, very Detroit via Atlanta, sort of punch in bars. They're both chill.
Yeah.
And they have a song together called Splash Brothers, which I like a lot, that came out a couple weeks ago.
Stepped me to come correct. All this ice around my neck. Feel like I'm anemic. Go, go. They keep pressing me to drop. I'm trying to be strategic. Go, go. I might tell you that I love you. I don't really mean it. You've been blowing up my phone for weeks. Act like I ain't see it.
Act like I ain't see it. Get your number, then delete it. Bitches on my bumper, but I'm getting money. I'm complete. I'm complete. Make an E-bone appetite. I get money in my sleep.
But Caribou put out her sort of follow-up single. And this is my actual song of the week. It's called Running Late. And it's a little bit emo. It's a little bit hard. And yeah, she just, I think she has a future. She started as Yachty's assistant and now she is rapping.
Hear it in my music. Mama scared for me to get a gun, cause she know I'ma use it. Floating off a Roxy in a bar, feel so therapeutic. Want me to stop taking all these drugs, she hate how I abuse it.
John, I have a big snack for you this week.
I will say, I have to confess, I have been avoiding the snack.
This has been sitting in the snack pile for almost as long as we've been doing this show.
I have been avoiding it. I'm scared of it. I'm genuinely scared of it. Like, what's the equivalent of spice, like the lactate for spice? Like, yeah, lactate first. I need that.
You need antacid specifically for collab beef jerky, which is what this is.
Oh, man. I'm so stressed.
This is Jack Link's beef jerky. Collaboration with Doritos. Spicy sweet chili flavor. This is the purple bag of Doritos, which I don't think people have really clocked this. Purple has become the third bag of Doritos.
Yeah, it's just there.
It's just there with the blue and the red.
It's literally just there now.
Yeah. And I call it Chinese food flavored. Tastes like really good Chinese food. Mm-hmm. It's like a General Tso's chicken flavored Dorito, basically. I go for the sweet spicy chili like quite often, just as like a just around the house snack.
Yeah, sure.
I bet you do not.
I don't. But it is just there.
Yeah.
Like, that is the striking.
It's not an alt flavor anymore. No. It's a main flavor.
I think the first couple times I saw it, I was like, oh, this will go away. But now it's just always at the supermarket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is Doritos.
I'm so stressed.
Branded beef jerky.
I'm so stressed.
You like beef jerky in general?
Yeah.
You like a dry, like a real beef jerky, no, like that you get at like a place like in the South, you know?
No, like one of those homemade, like moisty ones? No. But you know what I like is the Crave beef jerky. That's the black cherry flavor.
You like startup beef jerky.
No, but here's the thing. Once it hit co-packer era, like actually fell off.
Oh my gosh.
You're going to love this.
I'm taking the filet of this beef jerky. This is a big piece of Doritos beef jerky.
And it smells, maybe it'll be okay. I mean, it definitely has the Chinese food, the sort of like.
It's a complex flavor. It's taking me on a journey.
Yeah, you said that about the 11 Madison Park nuts. And in retrospect, I'm like, that's not a real. You've come up with a real word.
What do you mean?
We could do better.
You're like my writers. Food criticism?
Yeah, we're two writers.
I'm saying it starts in one place and you end up in another. And along the way, you got a few stops. What is that if not a journey? How about a roller coaster? I like it. It's not that spicy. Is it hurting you, John?
Talk to me in 20 minutes.
It's quite sweet.
It's way more sweet than spicy. I haven't figured out if the spice is just like a slow burn that's going to get to me at some point, but I think not.
But I like that it starts sweet and then the sort of peppery flavor really comes through after. I don't think it really tastes that much like the Doritos.
It doesn't have the sharpness of the Doritos.
Yeah, if you gave me this blind, believe it or not, I would not be able to guess that it was a Doritos collaboration.
Go back to the lab.
Yeah, I want more Dorito flavor, but I think it's a delicious beef jerky.
Like, I'm getting the sweetness, I'm getting the punch of the spice, but I'm not getting the meat flavor.
Saying it's all flavor, no beef.
Does feel that way. I mean, obviously not texturally, but in terms of like journey, as it were.
I would eat the whole pack.
Yeah.
It's an 8 out of 10 for me.
It is a touch like for me, it's a touch spicy, but I can but I can acknowledge that it's not actually spicy. I think it's good. I'm gonna go, I'm gonna say 8.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
We agree.
Yeah, I think rare. I maybe even would go a tiny bit higher, wow, to be honest.
You're in an 8.5.
Yeah, or like, no, nah, I might
strong go, 8.
It's like 8.2, but like only on some days. Because I'm gonna have days where like I can't handle this.
Right.
But like on a day when I can handle this,
yeah,
8.2. That's it. If you like NetSpend, try Jack Link's Doritos Spicy Sweet Chili flavor. That is our show. What a special thing. Every podcast ever is at nytimes.com/podcast. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/podcast. All the episodes with me and Joe are right here. And subscribe to Podcast Audio Edition anywhere you get your audio content. That's Spotify, Apple Music, also YouTube, etc. tinyurl.com/podcast Discord or /podcast Facebook. That's where you can ask us questions, talk to other folks. That's the Discord and the Facebook.
Make friends, find love.
That, are there any marriages?
Not yet, but I can feel it coming.
If you are going to have a podcast marriage, we'll come.
We'll officiate it.
I would love to officiate. Like that's standing offer?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, standing offer. Our senior producer is Sawyer Roque. Our editor is Jamie Heffitz. Special thanks, as always, to Karen Gans, Pedro Rosado, Nell Gologli, Pat Gunther, Leslie Davis. We'll be back next week.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.